the buzzer, McCord on its way. Oh my goodness! Oh!
They have to get it. There's no timeouts. They do.
Courtside with Greenberg and Dockage, the definitive college basketball podcast.
D Squared, we talked about this on your radio show today, but it's kind of irking me a little bit. I have to be honest with you. And the thing that's irking me is everyone's like, look, the guideline for being able to transfer immediately is going to pass. Your thoughts on having players being eligible immediately and having this one-time waiver?
You know, it is like other sports. I don't think guys are going to run people off. I don't think that's going to happen with coaches. I do think this, and I'm sure I'm on the wrong side of this, and all the hip cats and kittens will be mad at me, but I do think at some point somebody's going to have to protect the game and going to have to protect the institutions. I watch all these guys transferring, and they're not transferring for any reason other than they just can. And the truth of the matter is I have found, again, there are so many people that have opinions that never were head coaches, that never dealt with. I have found that a year sitting out is a good thing for a player. That is what I found from players, everyone that ever had to do it. A one-year transfer, fine, if that's what you want to do. However, I would say this. At some point, the institutions and the basketball program and college basketball in general is going to have to start being protected. Because we are going by way of Major League Baseball in that people don't know who's on their team anymore. So, fine, it's going to ask you to deal with it. I don't think coaches are going to run people off. But I swear to God, man, I'm trying to see the future here. And the future is a lot of people are going to get tired of college basketball because you don't know who's on your own damn team and you can't get close to the player.
I think coaches aren't going to run guys up. I think the other thing is going to happen. I think they're going to hold scholarships. So if you got 13 scholarships, they're going to keep 11 on scholarship, hold two open for potential transfers, and expecting probably a couple guys to leave. Like the greatest misnomer, we talked about it 1,000 times, dudes leave for playing time and role, and now when they have more time because of the pandemic, there are more people in their ear telling them what they want to hear and basically trying to manipulate them for their best interest. I mean, that's just the way it is. The whole idea that coaches are going to want the last three guys on my bench, I'm just going to run them off. That's not true. Because here's a couple things. One, you cannot keep 13 guys happy. It's impossible. All right? So, like, some guys at the end of your bench, they're there for a reason. They were recruited to be there. That's just the way it is. Or you're balancing your classes. Or you're redshirting guys. Look, this is the death of mid-major basketball. And you can say guys are going to transfer down, and that's great. You know, there will be a percentage of guys that transfer down. All right. But at the high major level, the best mid-major players that are evaluated and developed for 2 years, mid-major basketball will turn into basically junior colleges. And I said it on your radio show. You know, if I took a mid-major job, I would recruit the kid saying, look, here's the deal. I'm going to develop you. I'm going to work with you. I'm going to help you get better. And then 2 years from now, if you want to stay, I'd love for you to stay. But you know what? I'll be the first guy to make a phone call and help you get you where you want to go. The thing is that it is going to, and I don't want, please do not at me, people, about, you know, well, coaches can leave at any time. Coaches can leave at any time, and they also have to pay their buyout. So that's just the way it is. Whether the school they're going to, someone is paying the price for that coach to leave. And if the school's paying for it, you know what that means? That's money that school isn't paying that coach. So let's be straight with that. But here's the deal. Adversity reveals character. It's a great old quote, all right? Like here's the deal. Like, adversity, it's not that damn easy. College basketball is freaking hard. And you know what? It looks easy. So guys come in with unrealistic expectations. The other thing is I see too many guys that are afraid to coach their teams, and I can't wait till we get Hugs on here because I'd like to know his opinion of it. Guys are being – and I don't use the word held hostage, but guys are worried that guys are going to transfer. So they're not challenging them. So they're not helping them get better. They're lowering the standard. They're not kind of holding them as accountable. They're not challenging them to be the best, you know, as good as they can be. They're not helping them get better. They're not helping their teams get better because they're afraid they're losing them. And I say to those coaches, and I said this just a second ago on Twitter, I said, here's the deal. If you can't coach your best players, if you can't coach your team, you can't win with those guys anyway. So what's the difference? They're going to leave anyway. So, like, what, you know, I don't understand the deal. I really don't. It's one of those things that drives me crazy. And I totally disagree. Fran said, you know, people are going to run guys off the end of the bench. And I love me some Fran for Shella, but I think he's so way off on that deal.
I mean, I think that people might. I mean, but I look, it's hard to run guys off now. I mean, let's be honest. You got athletic directors that are having to answer for this. You have APR that's having to answer for this. You know, people think that you just can now come in and say, oh, you're gone. Well, that's not the way to heck. Indiana University, my place, has a student athlete bill of rights. I mean, it is not like you can do that. The thing that disturbs me about college basketball is a guy like Luther Muhammad. Luther Muhammad's playing at Ohio State. Everything's great. He wants to go have the ball in his hands more at Arizona State. I mean, so I don't mind if people that are going to defend people being leaving college, if we're doing it other than to say, well, it's in the best interest of the student. It is not. I'm just telling you, all these kids leaving, are you going to get a degree? Are you on a one-time transfer? Do your credits transfer? 5 years from now, where are you going to be? I mean, I don't know.
When how does it impact the APR?
Huh?
How does it impact the APR? I mean, that's the bigger thing. I mean, like, if you're going to be held accountable for, you know, graduation rates, how are they going to calculate that?
That's what, right. Hey, by the way, I just hit a 7-2 shot at Tampa with the win. So there you go.
So you do any research on that?
Yeah, I got a guy on the internet. He's pretty good. His name is Ryan Mueller. And he sends me, and so I always, you know, bet a couple races, and this one hit. It was a 7-2 shot. I put 20 on it. So I'm going to Sizzler, big boy.
There you go. Dinner's on you.
What are you going to do?
By the way, you know, like missing the Final Four, I missed dinner with Dan. Because, I mean, we've been known to have some famous dinners at the Final Four. Dinner at the Riverwalk was unbelievable.
Yeah.
And the Riverwalk. The Riverwalk. People saying hello to us. And then, we had that little thing with who was in the Final Four that year?
Oh, man, I don't know. I'd probably leave. I just go to have Fresca and Grey Goose or whatever with you, or Tito's and Fresca.
Tito. And it's Tito.
And every coach that's listening to this knows that's what the Final Four is all about. I mean, the games are a bit of a distraction, if you must know the truth. They get in the way of our Final Four. Hey, Seth, let me go back to something as we move forward. Do you think, and I kind of do, so I'm going to preface it by saying this. I was critical of Coach K when he said that the FBI investigation was just going to be a blip. He backed off of that. He did. He backed off of that and tried to explain what a blip is and blah, 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 blah. But the truth of the matter is he was right. I hate to admit it, but the man was right. Because we're going to have Mark Schlabaugh on. This whole NCAA thing, the scheme, everything else, it was a blip. A little small deal in college basketball. And my apologies, I'll say I was wrong. Coach K, you were right, which is not surprising given our careers.
Now here's the deal. Was it a blip because guys just disappeared? Was it a blip because the Southern District of New York was a joke? Was it a blip because this isn't happening? Was it a blip because people got the people? And like, there's one dude that worked for the FBI to disappear. So, I mean, like,
yeah.
I'm interested to ask Schlabaugh about that. But, you know, hey, getting back to that, the transfer thing, this is from the good people at Purdue. It's, you know, the transfer thing, like guys just – people think that, you know, you have to have transfers to win. Most guys that transfer up have no impact on teams winning. In fact, this past year, this grad transfer thing, guys that were averaging double figures points a game didn't do anything. I mean, they were pieces. They were role players. They went from focal points to role players. So, I mean, you know, that's kind of an interesting, I think, misrepresented because – here's the deal. I mean, very few guys, and that transfer year, like you look at the kid Forbes that went to Michigan State. You know what? Being in the program a year helped him. Understanding, like, you know, what it takes to be successful, learning how to work, learning how things are done. Like, I redshirted every single dude that played for me at Michigan State except Lucius Harris. He was pretty good. All right? And it helped those guys. And it also helped us win because we had those guys when they were older. And they all win. And they're all doing well. So, I mean, you know, I just think that's a misnomer. Well, we're waiting for Hugs. Right? What is the most bizarre?
Can I say something, though?
Yeah.
Can I say anything? All right. you were talking about that thing from Purdue. I'm going to read a little bit about it, if you don't mind. 420 players transferred, or 420 players drafted. 334 played at college. 78% of college players drafted played in the NCAA tournament. 59% won one game, all right? Only 16 players played on losing teams. 16 out of 420. Only 19 of 334 players had transferred. Less than 6% of the players had transferred. I mean, as one of my former players, Lenny Mattella, said, the grass is not always greener. And you're not always setting yourself up. In fact, I would argue, did you say that not one grad transfer had played in the Final Four?
Here it is. In the last 5 years, 100 different players started in the Final Four while there were only four graduate transfers. That's just played. Started in the Final Four. During that same period of time, 200 different players played in the Elite Eight. Only seven were graduate transfers. Lastly, in the past 5 years, 400 different players started in the Sweet 16. Only 12 were graduate transfers. And that's only between 3 and 4% of the starters of the last few rounds in the last five NCAA tournaments. Here's 14 more different mid-major players transferred to Power Conference as graduate transfers a year ago, averaging double figures at their respective schools. None of those players averaged double figures.
Hey, before we get to the legend, Bob Huggins, we need to hear from our friends at LinkedIn Jobs when it's time to hire. I know that finding the right person for your company can be challenging. This is especially true in a small business where every employee truly impacts the organization. So when you are ready to find that next hire, LinkedIn can help. LinkedIn Jobs matches your role with qualified candidates so you can find the right person quickly. LinkedIn is an active community of professionals with 675 million members nationwide. LinkedIn Jobs screens candidates with the hard and soft skills you're looking for so you can hire the right person faster. For things like collaboration, creativity, and adaptability, LinkedIn looks beyond just hard skills and puts your job post in front of qualified candidates every day so it's seen by people looking for jobs like yours. That's why companies rate LinkedIn Jobs the number one hiring platform for delivering quality hires. Find the right person for your business with LinkedIn Jobs, and you can pay what you want and get the first $50 off. Just visit LinkedIn.com/courtside. Again, that's LinkedIn.com/courtside to get $50 off your first job post. Terms and conditions do apply.
All right. Hey, Hobbs, got a question for you. During this quarantine period, what's the craziest thing you've been asked to do?
What's that?
What's the craziest thing your wife or your kids have asked you to do during this quarantine period?
My wife wanted me to build shelves.
How'd that go?
And it didn't.
You know, the fact, here's the way I look at it. The fact that your wife asked you to do that means that you probably at one point in your life could do that. Is that possible?
Yeah, that's exactly, yeah, you're right. I mean, I used to be poor. When you do a lot of things you don't want to do when you're poor.
What's the hardest thing being, Hugs? Seriously, like, you know, being away from your team, being away, you know, just losing a little bit of your freedom?
You know, I think being away from the team, you know, it's we haven't finished the semester yet. We're on the verge of finishing the semester, and this online stuff is crazy. You know, I think we've killed education, quite frankly, when we went to all this online stuff. I mean, you go back and think about the greatest thing you got out of college was relationships with people who have been whatever, business partners, people who have helped you, people that you were able to help through the years, relationships with people. It's kind of like, you know, guys say, how do you know all those guys? Well, I went to school with them. You know, we know them. If I was sitting on a whatever this thing is here, I'm not very adept at this kind of thing. But I mean, I wouldn't know anybody. So I kind of feel bad for our guys in that regard. But you know, we've got really good students, so we haven't had a problem.
Hey, Coach, when you heard initially, you know, that this was happening, games were going to be canceled, I've said publicly I thought it was an overreaction because I didn't know. What was your initial reaction when everything got canceled?
Well, we were in Kansas City, and so they called me and they said, we need to get together. They're only going to let 125 of our fans in. Well, we've got a pretty good fan base. So how do you sit down and pick 125 people and not, you know, irritate the rest of the people who can't get in? And so, you know, I sat down with our administration and we tried our best to come up with 125 people and got up the next day. I went down to brunch, walked out of brunch, sat down, was talking to the assistant AD, and our AD came in and said, it's over. I said, what do you mean it's over? He said, no, it's over. He said, the tournament's canceled. The NCAA tournament's going to be canceled. We're done for the year. You know, then the hardest thing is go tell your guys, because we were starting to play pretty well. Yeah, that's hard. Have you guys worked together before?
Yes, this is when we're at our very best. What do you say to them?
I told them the truth. I told them that it's over with. You know, it's we're done. We're done for the year.
So then you just, I mean, like every team, right? You just go home. And then you have a meeting, and then it becomes what? Then it was a week or so after they canceled school, or had they already done that?
Well, they didn't cancel school, but they put everything online. They shut down the dorms. They shut down all the dorms and all the residence facilities, university residence facilities. You know, guys off campus could still live off campus. But and then everything from that point on has really been online.
How often do you talk to your team?
We try to do it once a week. Coach Harrison is very astute at, you know, getting someone to get everybody together online. And I don't know what it's called. Zoom, I think it is. I think we're on Zoom. You know, the good part about it is they can talk to each other. Of course, they do anyways. But, you know, it's kind of fun, really, because they're making fun of each other and as they do. So it was good.
The hardest thing, though, Hugs, is like, so you're the makeup of your team. Do you have some guys that have nowhere to go to?
Well, you know, we have a Canadian. We're a little concerned about sending him back over the border, you know, because he may not be able to get back. But other than him, everybody's, well, let me think. There's a couple guys that are here, but it's different. I mean, it's different than what I experienced at some other places. You know, our guys here go home. They go home to their families, and they get some help if they need some help. And I think the hardest thing our guys have been doing is trying to find a place to go work out. You know, nobody will let you in. Can't get in their high school. They can't get in their church gym. They can't get in places to go get some shots up.
Hey, what have you done? Like, you're the biggest name in the state. I mean, have they reached out to you to try to do different things, your team, that type thing?
I've been on more mom and pop radio stations than you could ever imagine. I mean, I'm talking to people are great. I mean, they really are. And they, as you know, they love the Mountaineers. So it's kind of fun, you know, it's something to do, but I've been on a lot of the smaller, you know, radio stations as well as some of the bigger ones, but that's really all I've done. That, talk to our team, talk to our players, you know, you try to, we're fortunate. We signed three guys early. We had three guys graduate and we signed three guys early. So, you know, we're good. We got 12 squads. We had one guy transfer. So we've got 12 scholarship guys coming back. So that part of it's really hasn't been, you know, we don't feel any pressure to have to go out and recruit some guys.
You mentioned transfer. Obviously, in May, they're going to vote on this one-time transfer thing. What's your take on that thing?
It sucks. You know, here's the thing, Seth. You know, we start all this stuff with the guys that it's academically related, you know. Everything that comes out of Indianapolis is academically related, you know, when the reality is it's really not. You know, when we transferred back, you know, in the day, you set out a year. I was a transfer. I set out a year. It's the best thing that ever happened to me. I set out. I got ahead academically. I could practice with the team. I obviously couldn't play, but I could practice with the team. I learned my teammates, you know, and my coach got fired. I got a new coach whenever I was eligible, but still I had a relationship with guys. I knew where to get the ball to different guys, where they were good at scoring the ball. And, you know, it was great for me, and it was great for me academically. I graduated with a master's degree, you know, which back then was unheard of. But because I had that extra year and I really didn't know what I wanted to do, you know, so it was good for me to be able to take some courses and figure out what it was I wanted to do. And I think we've lost that. It's kind of like the graduate transfer thing. Why did we start the graduate transfer? Because, like Seth, you would say, well, I can't get what I want academically here at South Florida, so I need to transfer to the University of Florida because they have the major where I want to get my master's degree in. That was the purpose of it. Okay, that's good. Nothing wrong with that. I mean, I think we're all good with that. I think we're all good with people pursuing what they want to do educationally. And then all of a sudden it turned into none of those guys graduated. I mean, come on. They got in. None of them graduated. They came, they played, they left. Everything that we say we didn't stand for is what happened. And what did we do to fix it? Nothing. Absolutely nothing. So now we're going to say, okay, come on in, transfer. You can be eligible immediately. You're going probably into a different curriculum. Probably some of your stuff isn't going to transfer. And so now all we're going to do is all the APR thing that was so important. I mean, that was like the most important thing in the world back then. Now all of a sudden, have we thrown out the APR? Do we care? Do we care that some guys won't be able to transfer some of their courses and now they're eligible right away? What are we going to do? I guess we're going to keep them around for a fifth year. To do, you know, to do what? So that we prolong what it is that they want to do and be another year of their life. It just makes no sense to me. Absolutely no sense. And being a transfer myself, you know, I understood. And I can remember, Seth, you might have been in there when we were in there when they were talking about APR. And I said, why aren't transfers included into APR? Why aren't junior college guys counted in APR? I can remember like yesterday, Cincinnati Inquirer, Xavier, 100% graduation rate, UC, zero. We didn't graduate anybody. Well, that wasn't true. We graduated three junior college guys. It's just they didn't count. You know, so I said in the meeting, you may remember, I said X plus positive any number is greater than the sum of zero. I mean, show me a theorem that doesn't tell me that. Add those three guys in there, we're going to have somebody graduate. It's going to help our APR, you know, and they really couldn't explain that to me. And then eventually, you know, we were able to add those people in and everybody's APR went up and they said, what a wonderful thing. What a wonderful thing. But it really wasn't a wonderful thing if we had left it the way that they really devised it. You know, it's we got a whole bunch of people making decisions about us that have not a clue what we do, you know, and I'm old enough. I'm 66 years old now. I don't care. You know, it used to be, oh, they're going to come and get you. Come on, come and get me. You know, it's ridiculous. I mean, it's ridiculous that we sit and we let people make decisions that have zero clue about what we do, about what our kids need, what's good for our kids. You know, this one-time transfer thing is a disaster. I mean, it is a disaster. I just listened. I was. This is my preparation for this whole deal, Dan. I listened to Vitale. Vitale gave his 2 cents worth and on one-time immediate transfer deal, and he actually made sense. And I haven't even started happy hour yet. And he made sense. So.
Well, no, I agree with you. I have so many kids. I don't know one kid that I ever coached at Indiana or Bowling Green that didn't say the transfer year wasn't the best year of their entire deal. Honest to God, I haven't had one. And you talk about it. And how do you academically transfer from somewhere, have, a, as you said, a different curriculum, and all, everything counts, and you can get out of there in 4 years? Hug, that's question number one. And number two, my son was a grad transfer. I was telling him yesterday, I go, you're one of the few guys, under 10%, I think it is now, grad transfer that actually got a degree.
Absolutely.
Because those guys, Hugs, those guys are gone the minute the season's over, most grad transfers. Am I wrong about this?
Absolutely not. I mean, that's absolutely true. And it's such a facade that you know, that we're doing it for the betterment of the student athlete. Isn't that, I mean, didn't we all grow up with that phrase like ingrained in our brain? All for the betterment of the student athlete. This is not in the betterment of the student athlete in any way, shape, or form.
Well, I agree with that.
The transfers that have left you, I mean, just think about that. Have any of those guys even, and you don't have to mention names, I get a kick out of guys transfer. How many guys really make it when they transfer? I mean, that's the study I'd like to see.
We haven't had one guy, for the guys that transferred out of our program, we haven't had one guy have a better statistical year where he went than what he left. We haven't had one. And we've gone from guys getting 18 a game to guys getting 3 a game. We went from guys getting 14 a game to guys getting 9 a game. And a lot of those guys so-called went down a step. They went from a Power 5 league to a mid-major league, and their production went down. And they left for crazy reasons, like, you won't let me dribble. You can't. You can't. That's why. And you know what? And then they transferred down, and the guy says, oh, no, you can dribble. We'll let you create. We'll, until you turn it over 6 times in a game. And then you know what he says? Don't dribble. And so they're right back where they were. I mean, to me, it's absurd what's going on. I mean, it's just absolutely absurd. You know, it's you know, what do guys want to do? Everything they can't. Everything they can't.
Well, my thing is, guys are afraid to cut. Like, I go around, and, you know, obviously not in your place, but we go around. Dan and I talk about this all the time. Guys are afraid to coach their teams because they're afraid they're going to transfer. Yet, hell, if they're going to transfer, they're transferring. So you might as well coach your team because try to help the guy get better. I mean, like.
Well, I got news for everybody that thinks that. They better start coaching their team, because if not, they're going to get fired, because those guys are leaving anyways. I mean, let's be honest. Those guys are leaving anyways. You know, we've been really fortunate. I mean, this year, I mean, we had one guy leave, and I wanted him to, you know, so, I mean, we got guys that have bought in, and that's kind of old school, really. I mean, if you think about it, it's old school. You know, Dan, think about when you played, man. I mean, Coach Knight got on your ass. It wasn't like, hey, man, I'm leaving, you know. You know, it was more like, yes, sir. Yes, sir. Right? You know, I mean, come on. I mean, it's this whole thing. And I mean, I love our kids, because our guys are hanging in there. I mean, and I'm sure they're getting, and you know, what's happened is there's so many people in their ears, you know, there's so much going on. We've had so many guys leave that go play in the NBA that, you know, had no chance. You know, another year would have helped them mature, be better. Would they have been NBA guys? Probably not. But they sure weren't NBA guys when they left. If you're not going to be an NBA guy, why wouldn't you stay and get a degree? Why wouldn't you stay? We've had guys that are going to be like some of the better guys that have ever played here. And that says a lot. And they leave because some dude on the street said, hey, man, they're not looking out for your best interest, man. You need to go do this and do that. And it's like I tell our guys all the time, man, the hood rats will eat you up, man. They will eat you up. And you know what happens, man? As soon as you don't make it, you can't find them. They've crawled back in them rat holes, and they're back in there hibernating. They're not coming out. They don't care about you. I mean, let's grow up and be real about things. You know, worry about, hey, you know what? If you got somebody in your family who's knowledgeable, hey, man, listen to them. You know, if you don't trust your coach and you know somebody who's knowledgeable about what goes on, listen to, you don't have to do what they say, but listen to them, you know, be polite. The reality of it is take care of yourself, man. Don't worry about those other dudes. You know, it drives me crazy. And you guys know I've been fortunate. I've had guys play in the NBA. I've got to play for the max, you know. I mean, I've had first round picks. I've had, you know, and some of them have been terrific. I mean, in terms of taking care of their money, doing the right things, actually being charitable with their money when that was called for. You know, some of them haven't, you know, some of them haven't. It's kind of like I tell like the younger coaches, they're like, tell me something that I really ought to know. Well, if you don't want to hear from a former player, lend him some money. If you lend a former player money, you'll never hear from him again. I mean, that's the best way to get rid of them. Give them a little money. Tell them, hey, listen, I want this back. They ain't never calling you back.
Oh, hell. That's beautiful.
Hugs, did the university tell you anything on, like, West Virginia? They have any plan moving forward in terms of talking about bringing students back eventually or anything?
You know what, Seth? We had some students come back I'm not positive it was university housing or non-university housing. We got a lot of non-university housing here as well. But they came back and one of them got on a rowing machine and was working out. And then some other ones got on afterwards. And the first one, I guess, had the virus and it spread. We just had, and Dan, you know, this towers, I mean, four big towers. We had a case in towers. They shut all four towers down. You know, they're going to go clean, the whole deal. And I'm sure we're working on a plan, but I mean, it's hard. It's hard, Seth. It's hard. It's hard when you've got, you know, university housing. It's hard when you're in non-university housing. You know, our guys, basically they live, you know, with each other, you know, which I think that helps, but I mean, it's crazy. This whole thing is a bit nuts.
Hey, let's go to ball. 2010, you go to the Final Four. Butler gets hurt. If you don't mind, talk about that run for you, the fans, the whole place.
Well, I think it started. I think it started with the Big East tournament. Deshaun made a shot at the buzzer to beat Cincinnati, our first tournament game. We made a big shot against Notre Dame, and then they missed a shot at the end, and we win. And then we played Georgetown in the finals, and Deshaun makes a shot against Georgetown, and we win that one in a real close game. And the thing I remember most is standing down on the floor. They're playing Country Roads, of course. The commissioner actually came up and said, you think people would be upset if I played Country Roads? I said, you probably won't get out of here alive if you don't. So he's playing Country Roads, and I'm looking around at a ring of gold. And I mean a ring of gold, like maybe, you know, right above the lower section, just surrounded by West Virginia people, most of them crying, singing Country Roads. And then we went from there and we were fortunate to shoot the ball incredibly well against Kentucky. I think every field goal we had was a three pointer. of course, we couldn't get it any closer. You know, I mean, that was when you talk about that, that people talk about Cal's best team. That was, that team was so talented. I think their first seven guys were first rounders or something like that. And we just made shots, and then we got them to chase us. And once we got them to chase us, then we were in pretty good shape. But, and we, so we win that one. We go to Final Four, and then Day gets hurt. And man, you talk about deja vu. I mean, the first thing that goes through my mind is Kenyon. I mean, I saw in my mind Kenyon laying out there in the conference tournament whenever he broke his leg, and Deshaun laying out there, and it was, and he had meant so much to our program, so much to us, really, you know, being what we were, really one of the better teams in the country. And it's just, and you know, you don't think about that, you know. I say everybody afterwards, well, you know, what went through your mind? What's the first thing that went through your mind? First thing that went through my mind is this kid still going to be able to have a career? You know, he's worked so hard. He's been so good. He's done everything right. Why does it happen to a guy like this? Which is the same thing I thought about Kenyon. You know, when I went out with Kenyon, I went out and I hugged him, and I'm trying to console him. And you know, the first thing he said, why hugs? Why? And I'm like, man, I don't know. He said, you know, I wanted this so bad for you. He said, I wanted you to have a national championship. And when I went out, you know, it was kind of the same thing with Deshaun. It was never about, what happens to me. It was never about that. I mean, that never came up. You know, it was more about, I wanted to win this for West Virginia. I wanted our fans to be able to enjoy this. And, you know, it was just, those are, and I guess that's part of the reason, small part maybe, that those are two of the most special guys that I've ever coached, I've ever had the pleasure of being around, because they were selfless. I mean, they really were. And great players. They weren't good players. They were great players. And to be as selfless as what they were and care as much about their school, their teammates, you know, their coaches, as what those guys did was a special, special deal.
I'll tell you one thing, two things. That Kenyon Martin team, we didn't play against. We were on the court and got our ass kicked. We were in the building.
You weren't alone, Seth. You weren't alone. I mean, if it makes you feel any better, you were one of the long line.
That team was ridiculous. Like, trying to get anything going offensively on that team was impossible. And then trying to guard that team flat played at a different level. And then the Country Road said, the best open we ever had in my time on game day, there was nothing like that deal we did with your fans that game day. That thing set a standard that we have yet to reach again.
I just watched it. They just had it on TV the other day.
It's unbelievable.
You're an institution here in the state.
You know. Yeah, I know. It's my voice and my rugged country look.
Well, I didn't hear many comments about your voice, but it was a pretty neat. It was a neat deal.
Hugs, we appreciate you, man. You're the best.
Hey, guys, it's fun. I enjoy talking to you guys. You know, it's fun actually talking to somebody who knows something about basketball other than, you know, some guy calling in and asking you, you know, who did you recruit? You know, I mean, it's been in every newspaper in West Virginia and on every television station. I mean, probably, you know, wake up and smell the roses. But I enjoy talking to you guys. I mean, this is fun.
Fun. Yeah, we love talking to you. Talking. What time's happy hour?
What are we done? Yeah, we're done in about 30 seconds.
You're the best. Thank man. You, Hug.
Stay safe.
All right, guys. Take care.
All right. We're going to get right into this thing. The great Mark Schlabach is going to join us. Hey, Coach, we got to ask you the scheme. What was your take?
Me?
Yeah, you, man. You're
everyone's best. Coach on this. Everyone's coach.
You know, I thought it was a really entertaining documentary. I think Pat does a great job. He did a really nice job with the Baylor documentary on Dave Bliss. You know, I thought, you know, it was Christian Dawkins' story. You know, I think it was from his point of view. There wasn't a lot of new revelations in it, but I think if you're somebody who wasn't familiar with the case and hadn't followed the trials, you know, I think it would have been interesting. I think there were a lot of people probably sitting at the end of that documentary thinking, you know, why is this kid going to prison for this? You know, he still has an appeal on both of his cases that haven't been heard. And I know he's trying to avoid jail time, but, you know, I think it's clear Christian knew what he was doing was wrong in the eyes of the NCAA. He felt it was wrong that college basketball and college football players and college athletes in general are the only people that can't receive compensation. Coaches are paid, universities make millions of dollars. And, you know, he felt it was, you know, he felt he could right his perceived wrong by paying these guys. But I don't think he could have ever imagined that he was breaking federal laws by, you know, bribing kids and their parents and their handlers to go to certain schools sponsored by Adidas.
When you look at what Sean Miller and Will Wade, how they came out of this, how did you, number one, think they came out of it? And number two, ultimately, what do you think happens in Arizona and LSU with these two?
You know, there wasn't a lot of new stuff in the telephone calls that were played. You know, Yahoo and ESPN, we had reported a year ago the contents of the Will Wade call involving Javonte Smart. I think, you know, a lot of people made the statement that to read it and then hear it in Will Wade's voice, you know, are two different things. I think it was more impactful when you actually heard him. I think it's clear that both of those guys, both coaches, were very comfortable talking to Christian Dawkins about what they were talking about. You know, I'll leave it to people who have seen it to make up their own opinions on what they were talking about. I think it's pretty clear. In terms of Arizona and LSU, we've been told for the last year to 18 months that those are two of the programs that the NCAA is investigating. I think given the current situation with coronavirus, it may be later rather than sooner that they'll receive notices of allegations. But I do think both of those programs are going to receive NOAs. And based on what we've seen so far with NC State and Kansas, I think both schools are going to face very significant allegations.
What do you think the outcome is going to be like? So the NCAA, how many schools in the end will be under the umbrella?
Seth, I think off the top of my head, well, let's start here. I NC State has received an NOA. South Carolina has received one. Kansas has obviously received one. USC has one. Oklahoma State has one. TCU has one. Auburn does or does not have one. They won't release it through freedom of information request. Same deal with Creighton. They're a private school. They haven't said one way or another whether they've received a notice of allegations. You know, based on information that came out during the two federal trials involving Christian Dawkins and Adidas and the coaches, you know, I would suspect that Louisville's going to get one. Arizona's going to get one. LSU's going to get one. And I think there could be some other schools involved as well.
What's going to happen with Rick Pitino?
He's going to coach again, right?
But I mean, would there be anything with him? Will he catch any fallout here from Louisville?
Yeah, I mean, the NCAA could hit him with a show cause, Dan. I mean, you know, that can follow a coach. And based on the allegations at Louisville, you know, Brian Bowen's father agreeing to accept $100,000 and getting part of that money. There was an allegation of Kenny Johnson, an assistant coach under Pitino, providing him with some cash. You know, we'll see if that's included in the notice of allegations or not. But, you know, Louisville was already on probation. The fact that they were involved in something like that with Bowen, even if Pitino knew about it or not, I think is going to lead to some serious level one allegations, and Rick Pitino could ultimately be held responsible for that.
That's under head coach accountability.
Yeah, head coach accountability. I think any of the coaches who had assistant coaches taking money from Christian Dawkins or Marty Blazer, Manish Sood, the guys involved in the two federal trials. I think any program that had coaches accepting bribes, I think the head coaches could be hit with head coach control, and I think the programs could be hit with, you know, lack of institutional control or failure to monitor or whatever.
You don't think that won't even impact next season's if we're back up and running? That you don't even think that might impact next season's NCAA tournament, like Kansas, where they've gotten their letters and their.
Kansas has gotten their notice of allegation. The school and Bill Self have filed responses, and both of them have essentially denied almost all the charges involving basketball. You know, the big argument for Kansas and Bill Self is that, you know, this is a new theory from the NCAA that Adidas, you know, which pays it, you know, millions of dollars to sponsor the athletics program, the NCAA has basically declared Adidas and its employees to be boosters. And the fact that Adidas employees and consultants were involved in some of these pay-for-play schemes, they're saying that that's a violation of NCAA rules, and those are booster actions, and that's something Kansas is vehemently denied, as well as NC State. It's the same deal with NC State and Dennis Smith Jr., his father, allegedly getting from Adidas through TJ Gasnola. The NCAA in that case is also declared Adidas to be a booster, and NC State and Mark Gottfried are fighting that allegation as well.
Do you think anything's going to happen with this Avenatti stuff with Nike? I mean, does it go past – does this thing ever get past the Adidas, like they're the villains of all villains, or do you think it's going to end up cutting across the whole shoe landscape?
You know, it's interesting. I think if you followed these cases from the very beginning over the last two and a half years, I think in the back of the mind, I think anybody with any common sense could have figured out that Adidas wasn't bidding against itself. I mean, Adidas wasn't paying $100,000 to Brian Bowen's father just because it wanted to. I mean, there was a market, and that was the market for Brian Bowen. I covered Michael Avenatti's trial in New York back in February, in which he was convicted of attempting to extort, I think, as much as $25 million from Nike. And there were allegations that Nike employees were involved with steering kids to play for Nike grassroots EYBL teams, and then potentially getting them to go to Nike-sponsored schools. And similarly to the Adidas cases, the judge in the Avenatti case said it wasn't relevant to the crimes committed by Michael Avenatti. So those Nike consultants and AAU, EYBL coaches weren't required to testify.
The plot keeps going on, man. Is this ending now? Is this almost over, other than the NCAA stuff? The federal stuff's over, right?
Yeah, I don't think the federal government will dip back into it. It'd have to be something pretty egregious. But at the end of the day, you know, I think when they launched this investigation, and I think when they charged and then indicted these 10 guys, and I think they ended up taking 9 of them to trial, it was assistant coaches and a former runner and some consultants. And I think they thought the assistant coaches and guys like Christian Dawkins would flip, and they would go after people like Rick Pitino and Sean Miller and others. And in the end, you know, those guys fell on the swords, and most of them pled guilty. And the defendants that went to trial were found guilty on some charges. So I think they kind of got the low hanging fruit, for lack of a better term, and didn't get the big fish that they thought they were going to get in the beginning, and kind of lost some interest in it. But in terms of the NCAA, given the current environment with coronavirus and all the uncertainty, I think it could be this fall or even next year before some of these cases get in front of the NCAA Committee on Infractions. And some of them, including Kansas and NC State, are going through this new independent resolution panel, which could even extend the timeline even further if the independent committee panel decides to you know, it has the power to launch its own investigation if it feels like the enforcement staff's investigation is inadequate.
Well, I'll tell you one thing. We appreciate you coming on. I just want to, eventually, we've got to find my man D'Angelo and have him on the podcast. What do you think?
Good luck.
If you find out where he's at, please send along his number.
I mean, like, where is that? I mean, the guy worked for the FBI. How can he disappear? Is he in witness protection? I mean, how can a person disappear from the face of the earth when they had, I mean, like, he was the central figure. I want to know where this dude is. That's all. That's it. Beat squared. Close it up with this. Hugs. The best.
There's nothing better than Bob Huggins. When Bob Huggins gets loose, man, it is, it's fun. And you can tell he got emotional when he was talking about his two guys, particularly Deshaun Butler and Kenyon Martin. And that's great. That's what coaching is. And it's a fun time, man. Another fun podcast, big boy. Good stuff. Thank you.
You know what else it approves? One thing. Coaches like to talk to us.
Damn right. Just, why wouldn't they?
It's just the way it is. Catch you next week, brother. Wrap it up, baby. I'm out.
Thank you for listening to Courtside with Greenberg and Dockage. You can listen and subscribe to all ESPN podcasts in the Listen tab of the ESPN app, including the latest from the NBA and the Hoop Collective podcast, available in the ESPN app or Apple Podcast.